In his last book, Your Inner Fish, Neil Shubin delved into the amazing connections between human anatomy, our hands, our jaws, and the structures in the fish that first took over land 375 million years ago. Now he takes an even more expansive approach to the question of why we are the way we are in his new book, The Universe Within. Starting once again with fossils, he turns his gaze skyward. He shows how the entirety of the universe's 14 billion year history can be seen in our bodies. From our very molecular composition, he makes clear through the working of our eyes how the evolution of the cosmos has profound effects on the development of human life on Earth. Neil Shubin has been one of the major forces behind a new evolutionary synthesis of expeditionary paleontology, developmental genetics, and genomics. Trained at Columbia, Harvard, and UC Berkeley, he's currently Associate Dean of Biological Sciences at the University of Chicago. It's a great pleasure to welcome Neil Shubin to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
A delight, as always. The name of the new book, The Universe Within, Discovering the Common History of Rocks, Planets, and People. Was this a natural progression from Your Inner Fish?
Yeah, it really was. When I was writing Your Inner Fish, I was exploring and delving into the beautiful and important connections we have inside our own bodies and genes and cells to other creatures alive on the planet. But as I was writing that book, it became really clear that that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are deep connections to us and the planet and the solar system and the universe beyond. And those connections really come about very powerfully from our history. You know, if you look at our bodies, we share an over 3.4 billion year history with life on Earth, over 4 billion years of history with the planet, and over 13 or so billion years with the universe. And so there's layer after layer of history inside of us, and it became a sort of a fun story for me to tell how we've come to know that history.
Why, in coming to know that history, there have been many bumps along the way, haven't there?
Oh, you bet, you bet. And so, I mean, history, you know, uncovering history, let's take what the book's about is really evidence. You know, what do we know, what don't we know, and how do we know it, kind of.
Right.
And so science is the process of discovery, and we fumble our way in the dark sometimes. Sometimes there's lots of good planning that gets us there. But when you think about the kinds of evidence we have to see our connections to the rest of the world, and from other species to rocks even, it lies in our DNA, it lies in the structure of our anatomy. It lies in the fossils we find in the rocks of the world, but it also lies in the chemistry of those rocks and in what they tell us about the planet and beyond. I mean, when I tell you one of the things that really, really changed me when I was growing up, which was when I took a course in geology. You know, I grew up in Philadelphia, went to school in New York. You know, I didn't think about geology or rocks, but when I took a course in geology, I got to see rocks in a whole new way. I got to see rocks as a window into past worlds, that every rock on the ground has a story to tell of past worlds, and really it's a matter of unlocking that story inside the rock. So that's kind of what geology and paleontology are, and it turns out that the story inside the rocks is often parallel to that we see in fossils and bodies.
What is it about that story? Because you make the connection and you make it understandable in the sense of, because it seems on the face of it that would be a hard sell of describing to people of how that connection not only exists but is so vital.
Yeah, let me give you an example. Okay, here's something you know, when you write a book, you're exploring a world yourself.
Right.
And sometimes your mind gets blown, you know, as a writer, which is kind of what you're looking for, and as a scientist. You know, so one of the great examples here that fired me up was the uncovering the story of the clocks inside our bodies. You know, if you look inside our bodies, we have over 2 trillion cells of our own cells. There are microbes all over us, right? But let's ignore those for a second. Inside each cell is a clock, kind of DNA and protein, of the workings of DNA and protein that cycles during the day. And it cycles not in any sort of random way. It actually cycles in a virtual 24-hour cycle. So inside our bodies is our 2 trillion clocks, each of which is tuned to the spinning of the Earth and the rotation of the Moon about it, to the cosmological or the factors that give rise to our calendars and clocks, that we're tied to those. And indeed, the more you look, the more you find just how fundamental those clocks are biologically. So one of the fundamental properties of our planet is the clock defined by the night and day, spinning of the Earth and seasons, rotation of the moon, and so forth, and that tilt of the planet. Those things are part of our own biology and part of our health. You know, you think of many of us, it's winter, right? And I'm in Chicago. You guys are in the Northeast. You know, a lot of us are not sleeping well or, you know, eating not well. I mean, we're looking forward to sort of more even light of spring. You know, there's seasonal affective disorder, which is the most extreme form of that condition. But even more so, if we disrupt our body clocks, we can be susceptible to diseases, including even, if you believe current research, some cancers. So there's a beautiful connection of, you know, our own genetics and our own brains to the planet itself. And so I had just so much fun exploring that, really. And there are other examples as well, but that's one seen in rocks, it's one seen in bodies.
You write, and this is what I love about the book, is what you just said. You write so beautifully. The different clocks in bodies and in rocks don't tick independently. They are part of the same planetary and solar metronome. Comparisons of the DNA inside humans, animals, and bacteria speak of a common ancestor of all three that lived over 3 billion years ago. This is roughly the age of the earliest fossil-containing rocks. The broad match of dates from rocks and DNA is all the more remarkable given how the rocks have been heated and heaved over the same billions of years that DNA has mutated, evolved, and been swapped among species. And I guess that is what, as you say, is mind-blowing to think of how much outside influences, everything's getting thrown around, and this is still able, there is that internal metronome.
Yeah, that's an important point. You know, the fact that we're even able to decipher, like just like your first question, the fact that we can even decipher this history is really remarkable given how our Earth has changed over time. You know, but the beautiful thing about this is it's much like, you know, we're like detectives, if you will, historical detectives, and we're trying to assemble as many independent lines of evidence as possible to construct robust hypotheses of history, right? And so the best hypotheses we have of our history are ones that involve independent lines of evidence from genes and rocks and other areas. So we're trying to assemble that, using as much evidence as possible. And, you know, when you look at the, you know, history, there are some things we know that we feel we're very certain about. There are other things much less so, and some things we don't know at all. You know, it's a whole process of discovery for me and my colleagues.
And when you think about... obviously, you're looking at a time that goes back so far, and yet so much is being written about where we are now. I mean, you'll look at 14 billion years, yes, but where we are now in this planet and how it's moving and how it's heating up and so forth. So is that just a blip, or is that, I mean, how do we interpret that of how it fits into the grand picture?
Well, in the grand scheme of things, we're causing enormous amounts of change that are, you know, are geologically significant. If you look at the extinctions we're causing, for instance, they're rivaling some of the big extinctions that have happened in the history of the Earth. So one thing that knowing history does, not just of the planet but of the cosmos, it does give you perspective, okay? So there's multiple layers of perspective. What it does show is that we humans have really been game changers in a large sense to the planet itself. Because if you think about geological and evolutionary change, the kinds of stuff most scientists think about, that stuff can be relatively slow as compared to a human lifetime, right? Because, you know, genes, you know, they change from generation to generation. The planet can change, you know, over a period of 10 to 50 years. But really, we talk about, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of years when we're paleontologists. But when you realize and you think about the stark changes we're living through right now and our children will live through in the next generation, that puts a serious perspective on what we are able to do. And the game changer is human behavior, human culture, human decisions, human ideas. These have the power to affect our world in both positive and negative ways. And, boy, I encounter that every summer. I work up in the Arctic, you know, in the Canadian Arctic, and each summer in July, and boy, we've noticed major changes up there. Ice has just been disappearing. It's hard to miss that, and it's happening at a scale which, you know, is very rapid. When we, you know, for someone like me who thinks on geological time scales, which is, you know, long time scales, so it really does give us perspective. It gives us a sense that, you know, what we're doing with our with our behavior and our decisions it's awesome, it's scary, and it should engender a sense of responsibility for our stewardship of the planet.
You just stated that it can be both positive and negative. We've heard, I think most of us have heard, mostly negative. What are the positives?
Well, we can mitigate our effects. We are animals that can make choices, conscious decisions. We can evaluate options and take the best course of action. So collectively, individually and collectively, we can do things. There are agricultural processes and behaviors and mechanisms that are good for the planet. There are decisions we can make about products and manufacturing that are good for the planet or less impactful on the planet. Look, let's face it, we're multi-billion population species, right? So we are going to impact the planet. We are consumers, big time consumers. But we can make decisions that mitigate those effects and actually steward the planet for our children and grandchildren.
In talking about that stewardship, I'm curious as to can we be as we can see, relatively speaking, of how quickly we have changed, and you use the term game changers, of what we've been able to do in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Can the opposite be true in the sense of making things better in a relatively short period of time?
Yes. I mean, I think, we've set certain things in motion that, particularly with the carbon in the atmosphere, which will be hard to reverse in our lifetimes. Well, we could certainly slow that down. We can maintain certain agricultural practices which are more friendly to the earth. Development in coasts, I mean, we've just had witnessed Sandy and its effects. But really, when you think about sort of the large-scale effects, also what we've been doing is devastating wetlands, salt marshes, and so forth with our development. Those kinds of practices are likely to play out in a very negative way for us going forward. And we need to identify critical ecosystems to preserve. And we need to identify practices and choices which are in the best interest long-term for our children.
And I think what you said is so important of knowing that history really helps us because it gives us a perspective.
Yeah, it does. And, boy, when you look at history, you realize just how important carbon, that is, how it's been very important as a link between rock, air, water, and life, and how variation in carbon can have many impacts on the planet, and then just look at what's happening today. So I look at carbon in multiple timescales, as it's changed on long timescales, millions of years, but also short ones, and it's hard to ignore how important it is.
The name of the book is The Universe Within, Discovering the Common History of Rocks, Planets, and People. It is published by Pantheon. Neil Shubin, thank you very much for being with us. I do appreciate your time and your expertise. It's a great pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thanks a ton for having me on.
Thank you. Neil Shubin is currently Associate Dean of Biological Sciences at the University of Chicago. The name of the book is The University Within, Discovering the Common History of Rocks, Planets, and People, published by Pantheon. Coming up next, the Congressional Corner, you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.